Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Kuf Lamed. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material access by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today we are beginning the 10th Perek of Chulin, Hazroah v'Lachayayim. Zroah and Lachayayim v'Akeva are parts of Chulin animals, non-sacrificial animals, basically all animals that you slaughter for eating purposes. The arm, the cheek, and the keva, the stomach, are given to Kohanim. So the Mishnah features a number of halachas that are relevant to Zroah v'Chayayim v'Akeva. We now continue. The Mishnah. Hazroah v'Chayayim v'Akeva, the arm, the reference to the forearm, the lochayayim, the cheek, and the keva, the stomach. When we speak about the cheek, we're really referring to the jaw, including the tongue, is given to the Kohen. And Nohagin Ba'aretz Ubechutzaretz, the requirement applies in the land of Israel and outside as well, as opposed to, let us say, halachas that are, we call halachas atlius bekarka, things that are of an agricultural-based or plant-based halachas that are things that grow from the ground. For example, trumas and maisers and shvias, these are halachas that apply to Israel alone. This is not a land-bound, and hence it applies to chutzlarts as well. Bifnei Abayis, v'shelo bifnei Abayis. It applies in the time of the Beis HaMikdash and even after its destruction. Bechulin avoloi b'mukdashim. It applies only to mundane animals and not to sacrificial animals, not to sanctified animals. Without the Mishnah telling me this, I might have thought otherwise. And in order to dispel this thought, the Mishnah will cite a pasuk. Shehoya bedin. Bedin means, through logic, I would have thought to the contrary. In other words, that I would have thought that if you're telling me it applies to chulin, it certainly should apply to mukdashim. Uma im hachulin she'enon chayoven b'chozev eshok chayoven b'matonas. Mind you, chulin animals, which are not sacrificed, so there's no giving to the kohanim of the chozev eshok limbs, which is characteristic of sacrificial animals, especially is the case in the case of the Shlomim sacrifice. And yet, these chulin, which have an exemption regarding chozev eshok chayovim b'matonas, are obligated to have the matonas given from them. The matonas is a reference to the Zroah l'Chayayim v'Akeva. Kodshim shechayovim b'chozev eshok, sacrifices that one is chayev to give the chozev eshok to the kohen, eino din shechayev b'matonas, and all the more so there would be an expectation of giving the matonas as well to the kohen. Talmud Lomar, the pasuk therefore teaches us ve'etein oisam laaron hakohen ulevanav l'chok olam. This pasuk is in the context of the chozev eshok, and there is a limitation in this pasuk. It says, "Oisam, you shall give them the chozev eshok alone to Aaron ubonav, to the kohanim, and not the chozev, not the Zroah v'Chayayim v'Akeva of mukdashim." And from this pasuk, we learn, "Ein loy elo masha amor beinyan." There isn't unto him, unto the kohanim, anything other than that which is stated in the topic. And in the context of Mukdashim, only Chozev Eshok is stated and not Zroah l'Chayayim v'Akeva. As you can see, we have a slash mark in the Mishnah, indicating that that which follows is a new train of thought. You will see that we have a double underline featuring two phrases, double underlining being one of our series markings. Here, we're trying to emphasize two opposite situations. The Aleph case is Shekidam Mum Kavua Lekdeshan, where a person sanctified an animal, however, he improperly sanctified it, sanctified for as a sacrifice, that is, something that had a permanent blemish on it. An animal that had, while it was chulin, prior to its sanctification, had a permanent blemish. Then someone comes along and sanctifies that as a sacrifice, which is, he shouldn't have sanctified it as such, but he did. The second case is something that Shekidam, you can see the bays in the Mishnah with the double underline, it says, Kol Shekidam Hekdeshan as Mumun. That's a case where first an animal was sanctified and then a blemish developed. There's another case where there was a passing or temporary blemish that appeared on an animal that was then subsequently sanctified, but in those cases, in the cases featured under the Bays heading of the Mishnah, the sanctification takes hold. So our Mishnah continues, Kol HaKochim Shekidam Mum Kavua Lehekdeshan V'nifdu. Animals that were prior with a permanent blemish and then subsequently sanctified. As such, since there was an attempt to sanctify them, there's also a need to redeem them. Even though the redemption here isn't of a core necessity, but since they were sanctified, so it creates an impression that some level of sanctity settled upon them, so there's a requirement to go through a redemption as well. Chayovin b'vechor v'matonas. These animals, if they give birth for their first time, there will be an expectation to dedicate to separate the firstborn as a bechor, which is given to a kohen and brought as a sacrifice. And we'll see later, this is not the case of an animal that was sanctified and dedicated as a korban. In that case, there is no mitzvah of bechora. Likewise, it's chayav in uvamatonos, the giving of the zroach chayim v'keva, v'yoytzin lechulin ligazei zilaved, and once they are redeemed, they also become full-fledged chulin. They have a full-fledged chulin status, which means that they can be shorn and they can be used for work, for plowing, for example. Vladon v'chalovan muter lachar pidyonon, and any offspring that come from them, the vlad and their milk, will be muter after they are redeemed. Vashochton b'chutz poter, and one who slaughters them outside the Beis HaMikdash is exempt. He's not guilty of slaughtering sacrificial meat outside the Beis HaMikdash. V'ein oisin tumura, and they do not replicate themselves. If a person tried to replicate the sanctity, the supposed sanctity of this onto something else, it wouldn't take hold. The mesu yifdu, and if they drop dead, they can be redeemed. Even though in general we hold ain poidim as a kochim achilah klovim, that if it was a real sanctified animal where the sanctity took hold, even if it were redeemed, it could not be redeemed as a dead animal, because all you have to do with that is give it to dogs, and we have a rule, ein poidim eser kochim l'achilon l'klovim. Since in this case the mum kavua preceded the sanctification, it doesn't really become sanctified, and hence in its death it can be redeemed and fed to the dogs. Chutz min habachor u'min ha'maiser. There is an exception to this halacha if you're dealing with a firstborn or an animal that was tithed and counted as number 10. In those cases, even if the mum kavua preceded, namely, it was, let us say, it was born as a firstborn with a mum, or the 10th animal to be counted happened to be a baal mum, in those cases, they still do have a real level of sanctity, and hence the different points of leniency that we saw taught up till this point would not apply to those cases. Kol shekidim hekdeshin es mumon, o mum over kodim hekdeshon. Cases where the animal was proper, was sanctified, and only afterwards a mum, a blemish developed, or you had an animal that had a temporary, a passing type mum when you sanctified it. Ula achar mikan nolad lahem mum kavua. And in the case of the animal that was sanctified with a temporary mum, it was with temporary mum sanctified, and then afterwards a permanent mum developed. The nifdu, and in these cases they were then redeemed. Pturin min abuchoro min amatonos. There is an exemption of the firstborn born from them to be presented to the Kohen, and is exempt from matonas. V'einon yotzin l'chul migozes oved, and when you do redeem them, they nevertheless retain a certain sanctity level, which prevents them from being labeled as full-fledged chulin for shearing and for working with them. Uvlodon v'chalovon osur lachar pidyonon, offspring born from them and milk that comes from them are forbidden after the even after their redemption. Vashochton b'chutz chayov, if one sanctifies them, if one, let us say, slaughters them outside the base of Mikdash. Now Rashi adds over here, very importantly, if he slaughters them outside the base of Mikdash before they are redeemed, one would be chayev, one would be guilty of offering that which is sanctified, even though right now it has a mum on it, but one is guilty of slaughtering something of sanctity outside the Beis HaMikdash. That's called Shechitas Chutz. One would be in violation if he slaughters these, the cases under our Beis heading. The Oisin Tmura, they are capable of being replicated. The Im Mesu Yikberu, and in the event that they die on their own, they are to be buried. In other words, there is, as a result of dying, they cannot be subjected to redemption, because in order to be redeemed, the animal has to be standing and standing alive for evaluation. Or possibly because of the rule we mentioned before of Ein Poidim Es HaKotshim L'Achilim L'Klovim. Before going on in the Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading. Lomot Tzrichin HaPosuk De'oisam. We had in our Mishnah, it said in that when it comes to Mukdoshim, so you do not give from them anything beyond the Chos of Ashok. You know, so you don't give the Zerol Chayim Akeva to the Kohen. And this was learned from a Pasuk. The Gemara will be confronted by the question of what do I need the Pasuk for that? K'dei liftor Mukdoshim Zerol Chayim Akeva, to exempt sanctified animals from these matonas. Afilu b'liya Pasuk, even without the Pasuk, you would have realized that Kochim are exempt, because any kavachomer, the kavachomer that was attempted, was the kavachomer that was brought in the Mishnah, and as a result of it, we thought we needed a pasuk, but the pasuk is the kavachomer itself. The kavachomer de masnis and pricha, the kavachomer itself has a weakness to it. This will be the thrust of the question then. What do I need the pasuk for? If you're going to argue, well, without the pasuk, I would have learned from the Kal Vachomer that Mukdashim are subject to the Matanas. That Kal Vachomer has a hole in it. And this will be the thrust of the Gemara. In addition to the heading, the topic heading, we also have a Mivneh note, a structural note. We'll be introducing diamonds around two expressions that follow in the Gemara. These two expressions will affect be cases where the Gemara discusses kachim and their supposed chiyuv or non-chiyuv of matonas, and later we'll discuss the chulin that we thought are exempt from chozev eshok, but the Gemara will try to argue that chulin should be chayev and chozev eshok. So the purpose of these diamonds is to emphasize kachim and chulin, and the items that are not really relevant to them respectively. Let us now turn to the Gemara. We should also note, maybe before we read the Gemara, we'll see another marking, a series of double underlines. These double underlines will represent pirchos, the challenges to the Kal V'chomer. In other words, attempts to show that the Kal V'chomer in the Mishnah is weak. And if we can show that it's weak, then we will be reinstating our question of what do I need the pasuk for. Therefore, the role of the Gemara is to show that the Kal V'chomer really does have a basis. So now, the Gemara. Taimo de kosav rachmona oisam. The taimo means the reason for the ptur matonas b'mukdoshim. As a result of this pasuk oisam, which we saw in the Mishnah, v'etein oisam la'aron akoyin levonav chokolom. Ha lav hachi, if not for that, have amino, would I really have thought kachim chayovin b'matonis? Would I really have thought that because of the Kal V'chomer in the Mishnah? Ikol ha-mifrach, but you could challenge that Kal V'chomer. Ma lechulin shekein chayovin b'vechoyra. How could you expect to learn mukdashim thinking that mukdashim ought to be treated more strictly or more severely with more obligation than chulin, when chulin has an element of strictness above kachim, namely ma lechulin shekein chayovin b'vechoyra. A chulin animal that is bearing its first offspring is chayav to have it given as a bechor offering, which is not the case when it comes to mukdashim. Therefore, I don't need the pasuk to exempt kachim from matonas. I could argue, just like kachim is exempt from bechora, in other words, an animal that I set aside as a sacrifice, if it bears its first offspring, its first child, I don't give that to the kohen as bechora. Therefore, it stands to reason that the mukdashim will be exempt from matonis. So I can come to that conclusion even without activating the pasuk. So the Gemara responds, really, I do need the pasuk because I could make a Kal V'chomer tesi mizachorim. Tesi means derive. I could have derived a kachim obligation in matonas from male chulin. Male chulin doesn't bear children, so there's no bechora aspect there, and hence I could argue the Kal V'chomer in the Mishnah based on male chulin animals. The Gemara says no. Ma lezichorim, still, I could not argue a Kal V'chomer from zichorim, from male chulin animals. Shekein chayovin bereishis hagez. Male animals are obligated, male chulin animals are obligated in giving their shearings. When one has sheep, he shears their wool, he gives a portion of his shearings to a kohen. That's called reishis hagez. So, I would have said that there's no Kal V'chomer to make from chulin, even from male chulin, because I could have argued that when it comes to chulin, they're also obligated in reishis hagez, which you don't have in the realm of mukdashim. Mukdashim, you're not allowed to shear them. There's no shearings given to a kohen, and just like there's no reishis hagez, there's likewise no matanas from mukdashim. Therefore, what do I need the pasuk for? The Gemara answers, I'll tell you, I would have made a Kal V'chomer mityoshim. Tyoshim are goats. So there's no racious hages, there's no shearings from goats. And from that, I could have made the kal v'chomer. And as a result of that, I do need the pasuk. No, the Gemara says, that kal v'chomer would have been weak. Ma l'tiyoshim, how could you think to make a kal v'chomer from tiyoshim, chulin tiyoshim, shekein nichnosim l'dir l'saser? Goats are, chulin goats are subject to tithing, which is not the case when you're dealing with mukdashim. So just like mukdashim are exempt from maisris, so too mukdashim can very well be exempt from matonas. Therefore, what do I need the pasuk for? The Gemara responds, mi zikenim. Zikenim are animals that were already tithed. So zikenim literally means old ones, but they're animals that were from previous from a previous year, and they were already tithed, and therefore a kal v'chomer could be made from chulin zekenim. And as a result of that, I need the pasuk to tell me that by mukdashim, even though the kal v'chomer would have indicated that you should give matonas from mukdashim, comes along the pasuk and says no. The Gemara says, I wouldn't have argued a kal v'chomer from them, ma l'zekenim shekein nichnesu l'dir l'saser. Unlike mukdashim, the zekenim in the past had been subject to tithing, and mukdashim not. Therefore, I wouldn't have thought to make a kal v'chomer in the first place. So, therefore, once again, what do I need the pasuk to exempt mukdashim from matonis? The Gemara says, mi lokuach v'yosom. Lokuach is a purchased animal. A yosom is an animal that when it was born, at its birth, its mother died. Its mother died in childbirth. We're talking, of course, about animals. Purchased animals and yosomim are not subject to miser. So we have an example of chulin, where you cannot bring the miser factor in, and I would make a kal v'chomer from them, where those things that are not chayev in chazav v'shok are chayev in matonis. I would have argued that mukdashim that are chayev in chazav v'shok certainly should be chayev in matonis. So that's why I need the pasuk to tell me not so. The Gemara says no, even that would not have been the basis of a kal v'chomer. Ma l'lokuach v'yosom shekein nichnosin b'minon l'dir l'saser. Even though the actual purchased animal and the actual yosom animal are not subject to tithing, nevertheless, the variety of animal from which they come are subject to tithing. So it would be on that basis that I see the kal v'chomer would not have been made. Once again, that lokuach and yosom, even though they're not themselves subject to tithing, they come from a variety of animal that do require tithing. So, based on that, I would not have made the kal v'chomer. The Gemara says, if you're going to introduce variety of animal, in other words, even though specifically it's exempt, but it comes from a variety that is obligated, well then, kachim nami b'minon nichnasim l'dir l'saser. Sanctified animals are sanctified from a variety of animals, from cows, from sheep. Those are animals that, in general, are subject to tithing. So as a result of that, we cannot say that chulin animals have some type of stringency beyond kachim, because the last effort was to argue from the case of lekuach and yosom that they come from a variety of animal that needs tithing. Well, the same thing is the case by kachim. And being that that's the case, a kal v'chomer could have been made from chulin to kachim, suggesting that kachim are chayav in matonas. Therefore, I need the pasuk. As you can see, we have a period indicating that which follows is a new train of thought. V'yu chulin chayovim b'chazav v'shok mikal v'chomer. Let us suggest that chulin animals, any animal that you slaughter for meat-eating purposes, in addition to the matanz rachayim akeva, you ought to give chazav v'shok to the kohen. And we should arrive
at that conclusion using Kal v'chomer logic as follows. Uma kodshim she'ein chayovin b'matonis chayovin b'chazav v'shok. Sanctified animals which are not obligated in matonis, as we proved above. Yet there is chazav v'shok that is given to the Kohen. Chulin she'chayovin b'matonis. Common animals which are obligated in matanas, in other words, there is an additional level of obligation you find by chum that you don't find by kachim, eino din shechayovin b'chazav eshok, then all the more so, then certainly it should be chayev in chazav eshok, which is something that you do find by the kachim. Omar Kraw, well, to undo this conclusion, we present the pasuk, a pasuk that's found in the context of matanas, and it says, v'zeh yeh mishpat hakohanim. Zein, this is a limitation expression. This, namely, matonis, are given from chulin, so the matonis rachai mekeva, are given to the kohanim from the chulin, midi achrino lo. But anything else from the chulin, namely the chazav eshok, are not given to the kohen. The Gemara continues with a question. Ela time of the kosav rachmona zeh. So that you're saying to me that the whole reason for chulin being exempt from chazav eshok is because of this pasuk. Without this, you would have thought that chulin are obligated in chazav eshok just like kachim. Yeah, but v'habayi tenufa. If you're going to be learning the chulin from kachim, well, we know by kachim there's a tenufa ceremony that takes place with the chazav eshok. In other words, there's a waving ceremony where the kohen and the bailim place the chazav eshok on their arms and do a waving action. So, are you going to suggest then that the chulin chazav eshok would be subject to waving? Well, hey chulin finu, where are you going to do the waving? E avroi, if you're going to do it outside the Beis HaMikdash, after all, we're dealing with chulin, so you might think that, well, I'll do it outside the Beis HaMikdash. But that's not possible. Lifnei Hashem ksiv. The pasuk says that waving takes place lifnei Hashem, which means in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. E, and if you're going to think we're at the top of Amud Beis, E agavoi, if you're going to think to do the waving inside the Beis HaMikdash in the Azorah, well, that would be impossible because Kamaya Chulin Azorah. You'd be guilty of bringing the mundane into the Azorah, which you're not allowed to do. Hilkach lo efshar. Therefore, Chazav Eshok, or therefore the waving, is not possible. And if the waving is not possible, the waving is part and parcel of the Chazav Eshok. Part of the whole basis of Chazav Eshok is the waving. And if I can't do the waving, so there's not going to be any chazav eshok by the chulin, well then what do I need the pasuk for? The pasuk that was cited as the reason for exempting chulin from chazav eshok, I don't need the pasuk for that. I can tell you that chulin are exempt from chazav eshok by virtue of the fact that you can't do the waving. So the Gemara answers, l'chadarab chista, I need the pasuk for Rav Chista's teaching. In other words, the pasuk serves as the basis of Rav Chista's teaching. Gemar Rav Chista, Hamazik Matnis Kahuna, O Sha'achlan Potter Milashalem. That one who damages Matnis Kahuna, we said the Matnis Kahuna, like the Zroah Chaim Vakeva, if he damages it, if he eats it himself, the non-kohen, the owner of the animal, eats them without giving to the kohen, he's exempt from compensating the kohen for that. Let's glance at the Rashi on the third line from the top. Dichtiv b'hu zeh. It says zeh by the matnes kahuna. Demashma ba'oidin kayomas chaylitnon. When they are around, you have to give them to the kohen. Aval einon kayomas. If they are not around, they got lost or were eaten. Lo chiv akosav v'hentashlumin. The pasuk does not obligate. The owner to offer compensation. Once again, the pasuk says zeh, this, meaning the matanas themselves you give to the kohen, and not anything further. And what we're referring to is not the compensation for them. At this point, the Gemara now turns and focuses on Rav Chisda's teaching and will then challenge it. And if you look at the side of our Gemara, we have under our No Say heading, Dino Shel Rav Chisda. We've placed Rav Chisda in a firebox. That's because the Gemara is going to be focusing on his shita for not only this, the balance of this entire Omen of Gemara, but also this discussion continues to the top of Kuf Lamed Aleph as well. Hence, as being such a central opinion or central theme, we have marked him, Rav Chisda, in a firebox. So the din of Rav Chisda, Hamazik Matnis Kuna Ushochlan Potter Milashalim. That's what we're focusing on, namely his din. And then under our Mivneh heading, we feature a triangle, because as you skim along on the page, you will notice a series of these triangles. They are Sitra Shekushas Al Hanal. These are a series of questions on what he is teaching. So now in the Gemara, fourth line from the top, Gufa. Omar Rav Chisda, Hamazik Matnis Kuna O Sheochlan, one who damages Matnis Kuna or eats them, Potter Milashalim, he does not have to offer, he does not offer, he's exempt from needing to compensate. My Taima, what is the reason for this exemption? Number one, Ibo Yaseima, one possibility is Dechtiv Zeh, based on the Pasuk, which we saw before in Rashi, namely, the Matanis themselves are obligated to be given the coin, but if they're not around, no obligation. Another explanation for this is that there isn't any one that can actually claim the compensation. In other words, if a person ate the matanas, in order to talk about compensation, you would have to have someone who is claiming it. Which is the common situation if, let us say, an item, a piece of property was damaged, so the owner of the property comes to lay a claim to it or for its compensation. In this case, who is going to lay claim to the matonas that were eaten by the owner? So since there is no one that's going to place claim to it, you might argue, well, the Kohanim can place claim to it. In other words, a Kohen who noticed that someone ate the Zeruah Chaim V'Keva of his slaughtered animal, the Kohen will come knocking on the door and say, hey, you know, you ate something that's coming to me. Well, the owner could say, I had no intention of ever giving it to you. I was going to give it to another Kohen. Therefore, any one Kohen could not lay claim to it. Therefore, it's called Mamon Shein Lo Toivim, and with that we understand why Rav Chisda says that one who is mazik or eats the Matnas Kahuna, he is exempt from paying, because there's no one that can lay claim to the compensation. Meisvei, we have a challenge to Rav Chisda. It says, Vezeh Ye Mishpat HaKohanim. That is a pasuk. This pasuk, Dvarim Yudches Pasuk Gimel, was cited on Amud Aleph. The pasuk reads, "Vezeh yeh mishpat hakohanim me'esom me'ezov chayazevach im shor im se v'nosan lakohen azor chayim v'akeva." This pasuk is found in the context of the matnas kuna of chulin. And we read on in this source, and it says, "Malameid shamatonos din." Since the word mishpat is associated with legal procedure, it says that matanas are treated as din. L'may hilchasa, what do you mean to say that the matanas are treated as din? A din associated with court procedure and legal rulings. L'may hilchasa lav lehotzion bedayonim, does this not imply that if there's a claim levied on an owner who ate or ruined the matanas, that the judges can act to extricate compensation from the party. Let us take a look at the Rashi on the upper part of the narrow lines, Mishpat Malamed Shamatonas Din. Dayonim Niskokim Lahan, Lotzim by Dayonim. That judges will deal with such a claim. Almo Kohen Rishon HaTovan. It would then appear that the first Kohen to come along and say, hey, you know, you ruined those matonas, I want you to pay me for them. Motzion miyodo. He would be successful in his claim and able to extract compensation. This would be a challenge to Rav Chisda, who was claiming that the matnas kuna is an example of monies or items that have no claimers, claiming people claiming them. The Gemara answers in defense of Rav Chisda and says, Loi. This source that says that the Malamed Shematonas Din is not with regard to a claim laid against an owner who ruins them, but rather, L'cholkon be'dayonim, that judges must oversee the distribution of the Matonas. Namely, the judges tell the general public to whom they should give the matonis and to whom not. Uched Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani. Before going on in the Gemara, we just note that what we are dealing with right now is an answer, a long answer. You can see the Tuf is encircled with a descending vertical dashed line, indicating all of the lines of Gemara that are opposite this serve to answer on behalf of Rav Chisda. This pasuk v'zeh yemishpat konim, and the source that tells me melamed shematonas din is to tell me that dayonim shall oversee their distribution. Uch Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani, and in accordance with his teaching. The Amar Shmuel Nachmani Amar Yonasan. Minayin she'ein noisin matana l'koin amars. From where do we know that one is not to give matanas to a kohen who is an ignoramus? Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Vayomer lom liyeshu shalaim loseis minas hakoyanim vehaleviim leman yechziku b'toras Hashem." This pasuk in Divrei Yomim speaks about the distribution of the portions owed to kohanim and leviim. We learn from this, "Kol amachzik b'toras Hashem yeshlo minas." He who is knowledgeable of Torah, knowledgeable and observes Torah and Torah study, he gets a portion. V'sheinu machzik b'toras Hashem, for example, the Am Ha'aretz, the ignoramus, who is not preserving the Torah and Torah study, ein lo menas. He does not get a portion. So as far as Rav Chisda's din is concerned, he will still maintain that Matnas Kuna is called Momon She'ein Lo Tovim. Toshma, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaser Omer, Mishpat. Notice the word Mishpat is in quotation marks. We have an arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara indicating where we saw this word before. The expectation is for you to align this arrow with the previous arrow, and you can see what we're referring to. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaser says the word Mishpat Malame Shamatonas Din. Would you say the same thing with regard to Chosev Eshok, that they are also classified as Din? Talmud Lomar, Zeh. From the same Pasuk, which said, V'zeh yeh mishpat ha-kohanim, we learn a limitation, namely that Chosev Eshok are not treated as Din. Limai, well, with regard to what? Ilema l'choko b'dayonim. If this is teaching me the halacha of being supervised, their distribution being supervised, and you would be telling me that only by matonas are their distribution supervised and not chazav eshok. Well, that's not true. Otu chazav eshok lav b'dayonim michalku. Would you think that chazav eshok are not overseen by dayonim with regard to their distribution? Elo lav lahotzi b'dayonim. So we must rather come to the conclusion that this is a reference to their being claimed by a kohen in court, and the kohen would be successful in laying claim on matonas. And this possibility applies to matonas and not to chazav eshok. Well, this would be a kashon Rav Chisda. Rashi points out, and like we could understand this limitation as applying only to matanos and not to chazav ashok. The reason for this is since korbanos come for the purpose of atonement, it's not common that someone would retain and not give the chazav ashok. Hence, it's reasonable to understand that Dayanim would not be involved in overseeing the distribution or the claiming of chazav ashok. So that the idea of laying claims and hence involving Dayanim would be something relevant to Chulin and not to chazav ashok. Well, that having been said, we would have a Kashan Rav Chisda. The Gemara says, Hocha b'may askinan, this source which mentions that matanas are din and are subject to claims being acted upon by Dayanim, the osu liyodei. It's talking about a case where the matanas were given to a Kohen. In other words, the Kohen already took ownership of the matanas. And then someone damages the matanas in the reshus of the Kohen. Oh, then the Kohen can go to the judge and ask him to extract compensation for it. But prior to that, when the matanas have not been given out, then Rav Chisda's din kicks in and says that if they're damaged in the reshus of the owner, or the owner eats them, no one can lay claim on it. It's momon shein lo toivim. The Gemara asks on this answer, though, e de osu liyodei my lemeimra. If you're talking about matanas that the Kohen himself already took possession of, what do I need to tell you this for? This is obvious. It becomes the property of the Kohen, personal property of the Kohen, and of course he can lay claim on it if someone damages them. The Gemara answers, there is a chiddush. The osu liyodei b'tivlayu. Tivlayu means something that's untied. The case is, someone slaughtered an animal, and before separating these respective limbs for the Kohen, he gave the entire animal to the Kohen, with the expectation that the Kohen will separate those limbs for himself. So it was given to the Kohen, but in a pre-tithed or pre-separated state. The Kosovar Haitano, the Tano that says that the Kohen can lay claim on these matonas, even though they haven't been formally separated from the animal, matonas shelohurmu kamishahurmu damyon, matonas that have not been separated are viewed as if they are separated. And as a result of our viewing them as separated, the Kohen in whose domain these are found, he is the owner of them. And therefore, if anything happens to them at this point, even though they haven't been physically separated from the animal, the Kohen is the Kohen in whose domain they are found is able to lay claim on it. That's the Chiddush. Because otherwise, without this particular source, I might have thought that as long as they haven't been physically separated from the animal, the Kohen has no rights to it. The specific Kohen has no rights to it. So we're telling you here that a Kohen in whose domain this animal is found, this animal that has been slaughtered, he is the one that can lay claim on those matonas. And therefore, if anything happens at this point, if they're stolen or someone else eats them, that Kohen can lay claim to it. Toshma. We have a source from which we are going to raise a question. However, it doesn't deal directly with the Zerol HaChaim Akeva, but it does refer to a realm of tithing that has a point of similarity. This source says, Balabayas, Shoy over mi mokum mokum. Baal bayis is a reference to a man of means that happens to be traveling. He's not at home. He's not. He doesn't have access to his own food in his kitchen. V'tzorach litol leket shichopeil ma'aser ani. As a traveler, so he has a right to sustain himself based on leket shichopeil. These are different tithes that let's say allowances that an oni has with regard to produce. No tail. This person who himself is not impoverished, he's simply a traveler, so he's allowed to help himself to the leket shikopeya and meiser ani, which are different, as we said, tithes given to the poor. So this traveler is allowed to take them. Ushiachzor, and when he gets home, yeshalem divrei Rabbi Eliezer. He then must pay. We have to draw a parallel in the meantime between leket shikopeya maisoni. These are, we'll say, tithes given to the poor, to the case of Zrochaim Keva, which is a tithe given to Kohanim. In this source we see that someone who by letter of the law is not entitled to it, if he eats it, so there may be a technical allowance from Tzidit, but he must compensate, he has to pay. So too we are going to argue that in the case of Chaim Akeva, he must pay, which would be a challenge to Rav Chisda, who described the Matnas Kuna as Mamon Shein Lo Toivim. Amar Rav Chisda, Midas Chasidus Shanu Kan. Rav Chisda says that this source cannot be raised as a challenge. This source is dealing with a person who is acting beyond the letter of the law, meaning he doesn't really have to pay. This Baal HaBayis, who was traveling, who ate the leket shikopeya, doesn't really have to pay because of what we saw above. Rav Chisda taught us this would be another example of Mamon She'en Lo Toivim. Omar Rava. Rava challenges this particular defense and says, Tana Tani Yeshalem. The Tana uses the word "you must pay." The At Amris Midas Chasidus Shanukan, and you are trying to argue that this source reflects some kind of beyond letter of the law approach. The Ode, and furthermore, Mida Rebbe Eliezer Lakin Vleisuv. Let us take a look at the Rashi. A few lines down from your Rashi says the Oid. Mi Savris Mida Rebbe Eliezer Kamoisiv. Who is to say that the question from the case of the Leket Shikopeya is being raised on Rav Chisda's original teaching from Rebbe Eliezer? De Motzinon Lemeimar to Rav Chisda Mishani Alo Midas Chasidus Shanukan. And based on having asked from Rebbe Eliezer, then Rav Chisda was going to offer his answer of Midas Chasidus. Elo midarabonon moisiv. Rather, the question was raised from the Rabbonon, the Allah Mishani Rav Chisda Midas Chasidus Shanu. So turning to the Gemara. Elo mi seifa. But rather, if you want to raise a question on Rav Chisda from the source of the traveler and his eating of the leket shikopeya, let us raise a question from the seifa. It says, v'chachomim omrim, oni hoya ba'ois hashah. This traveler doesn't have to pay because being that he's out of his house, he's viewed as an oni, an impoverished person. And as such, he has all the right to the leket shikopeya. But now we will make a diuk, an inference. Taima dioni. The reason that there's exemption is because we are viewing him legally as an oni. Ha ashir. Let us say you were dealing with a person who is not a traveler, but a real ashir, who is a man of means, who has no right to the leket shikopeya. We, the chachamim, would tell you mishalem, that he does have to pay. Well, am I? Why should that be? Leve, if Rav Chisda is correct, let it be kemazik matnas kuna shochlan. Let it be treated as one who damages or eats the matnas kuna. And according to Rav Chisda, it's mamon shein lo tovim, and there would be no obligation to pay. Amar of Chizda Midas Chasidus Shanukan. It's with regard to this that Rav Chizda says, well, the inference that you're making that the Oshir would be obligated to pay is because of beyond the letter of the law. Notice, of course, in the case of the Chachamim, the word Yishalem did not appear. The Mishalem is a function of an inference drawn from it. Therefore, Rav Chizda is able to give the answer of Midas Chasidus Shanukan that as far as the inference is concerned, it's an expectation beyond the letter of the law, something characteristic of Chasidus, of piety, but not letter of the law. And why is that so? Because it's Mamon She'ein Lo Tovim. There's no specific person that can lay claim on these items. Toshma. Once again, we raise a kasha on Rav Chizda. Minayin lebalabaya shocha pirosov tevalim. From where do I know that an owner of a field that ate his untithed fruits, v'chein levi shocha masrosov tevalim, or a levi that ate from his meiser tithe, from which one is expected to give a 10% to a kohen. In other words, after a levi receives his Meiser, from that a Levi is supposed to give 10% of that to a Kohen, but he didn't. He ate his Meiser as Tevel, untithed. Minayin shepotim min ha-tashlumin, from where do I know that he's exempt from compensating, from offering compensation? Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk says, V'lo yichalu es kodshe ben Yisrael she yorimu. Ein l'cho bohen elo mishas haroma v'elech. There is no obligation to offer compensation until the tithe has been made. So in these cases where the damage was done, the wrongful eating of it was done before the tithe was separated, so therefore there's no compensation. Now we infer, however, after the tithe took place, miha mishalem. Let us say you have an owner that separated his truma, or the levi that separated his truma's meiser, and then went ahead and ate it before giving it to the kohen. So we can infer from this source that he does need to pay. Well, why should he need to pay? Lehevei kemazik matnas kuno shochlam. Let it be no different than the case of mazik matnas kuno, or the eating of it, and Rav Chizda said it's mamon she'ein lo tovim. So too in this case, so who's going to be claiming the truma? Which kohen is going to be claiming the truma? And yet it says that there is an obligation to pay. So it must be that the first kohen who seeks compensation does have a right to it, and that would be a challenge to Rav Chizda. Hochanami, so too over here, the case is the asu liyodei betivlayu. The Kohen received it already, but he received it. He received the produce that was yet untithed. In other words, he received a large amount of produce from the Balabayas, or from the Levi, before the tithing was made. But it was transferred, kit and caboodle, to the Kohen. And we say that the latent tithe that's in this produce is considered, as the Gemara says, it's viewed as if it's already been tithed, and hence, when it gets into the domain of the Kohen, even though physically it hasn't been tithed yet, it's considered the Kohen's property. And as such, if someone damages it or eats it, so they have to offer this Kohen compensation, because he is the specific owner of it at this point. However, prior to it actually having been given to a Kohen, as Rav Chizda says, there would be no compensation because of it being mamon she'ein lo tovim. The series of questions continues, but with that we conclude our shiur for today.